Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 44, recorded March 14th, 2012. Matthew Flannery of Kiva. Triangulation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show that, I look forward to every week. Tom Merritt and I get to interview somebody interesting, smart, somebody changing the world in this case. And we're very excited about our guest this week. It's somebody I interviewed, actually. I interviewed Matt at, I think we talked, didn't we, Matt, at Le Web?
Le Web, à Paris.
Matthew Flannery is the founder of Kiva, which is a micro lender. Matthew, welcome to Triangulation.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So I've been a customer. I've been a user.
A lender
on Kiva since 2008.
Kiva's a really neat idea. First of all, the Kiva site, kiva.org, loans that change lives. How did you come up with this idea, Matthew?
All right. Well, in 2004, I was a computer programmer at TiVo, helping people pause live TV, working all day on that. And I saw a guy speak named Professor Muhammad Yunus, who helped create the Grameen Bank, which is the world's first ever microfinance bank, a bank that lends to women in Bangladesh. And I saw him speak about his work there, how village after village, people wouldn't believe him that relatively low-income, illiterate women could not pay back loans, and he proved them wrong time after time again, particularly by lending to women in groups and then having them mutually guarantee each other. I was looking for a change in my life, and I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, so I moved to Africa for a while.
Wow.
And volunteered at a microfinance institution out there. We were essentially giving loans and small grants to business owners to help grow and start businesses. I noticed a couple things. First of all, people that are in poverty don't really talk about poverty. First and foremost, what they usually want to focus on is business, their hopes and dreams and strategies and schemes to get ahead and change their life. And that's a very, very different dynamic than I had read about when I was thinking about Africa. I thought of Africa mostly in terms of disease and starvation and warfare. But it was a really uplifting and fun experience. And I wanted to create an online experience that sort of mimicked that. So there was an internet cafe in that part of the world. Internet was everywhere, and digital and mobile technology was everywhere, surprisingly. And so I just created a little dynamic whereby people could sponsor a business halfway across the world and act not as a donor, but as a lender and actually get paid back. And just did it on a real small level for many years. It wasn't necessarily a business idea. It was just a project that I was doing on the side. But now I'm about 6 years in, and we've done about $300 million in loans.
Wow.
And we have about 1 million users. So it turned out that a lot of people are interested in it, and it's just been a fun and incredible journey.
Now, the idea is that you take some money that's probably not that much for you, and you put it in a pool that then becomes a lot more money because a lot of people are contributing to it, and then becomes a huge benefit to, say, a pig farmer in Cambodia or somebody setting up a pharmacy in Uganda and helps them have the capital that they need to get a business started, right?
Yeah, that was the idea. I mean, at the time, I had a few extra dollars, and I could lend $300 to somebody to start a store in Uganda. And that was a very powerful and empowering dynamic because I could have a big impact on someone else's life. And what wasn't a lot of money to me was a lot of money there. And that dynamic has sort of spread all over the world. The average borrower on our website is borrowing about $400 each, and the average lender lends about $75 the first time they lend on Kiva.
Now, when I lend money, like right now I've got money out to someone who is doing a cereals business in Benin, Is that going directly to them? Is it going through Kiva to them? How does the money get to these folks?
Yeah, great question. So the way we scaled to other countries is we partnered with local NGOs and small banks that lend money to people, low-income people in their neighborhood, to help them get out of poverty. So the people on the website, the borrowers themselves, didn't have a bank account to start with. That's sort of by definition the group of people we're working with. So the way we get the money is we first send the money to the intermediary who makes the loans, disperses the loans in cash to the borrowers in Benin or Rwanda, Cambodia, Tanzania, all over the world.
And the repayment rate is kind of astounding. I'm on your site. It says 98.something%, almost 99% repayment rate. People do not default on these loans.
People don't default on the loans because it's the only chance that they get to make a difference in their life. So it's very, very important to them. It's not like in the U.S. where we have several credit cards and we might pay one back this month and another one back the next month. People take this very seriously.
Now, I have had 10 loans that I've made over the course of using Kiva. Only one time have I ever even ended with a loss, and they almost paid it 100% back. They made it very close. So, you know, this is something when I started, I'm like, I wonder how long I'll be able to keep relending this money.
Do you put more money in, Tom, or is it just...
I haven't.
So you put the initial investment in and just keep... I haven't needed to
up until
That's so
now.
Cool.
Because I can just keep reloaning it back out. And of course, you know, it helps if you do add more and start adding more to the pool. But you don't make money back. I think that's the first question a lot of people ask me. They're like, "Oh, so do you make interest on the money?" And the answer is no. There's some good reasons for that, though.
Yeah, we've shied away from allowing our lenders to make a profit or make an interest rate on the website. We're a nonprofit in San Francisco, and it would really mess up with our charter and mess with our tax status to do so. In addition, the regulatory environment in the U.S. doesn't really allow that to happen. So that things like the SEC and the IRS, these big agencies, regulate that in a way that makes it really pretty much impossible for us to do so.
Well, I wish you were free to do so, though, because that would make me want to lend even more. Because if I put in $50 and then I end up getting $55 back, well, then I can lend $55. And, you know, it's not about making money, but it's having more to add to the pool.
No, I hear you. It's not a philosophical difference. Yeah, yeah. It's more of a legal issue. It's actually changing, though. Last week, Congress approved a bill that didn't make it through the Senate yet, but it did make it through Congress to allow companies like Kiva to do just that. And so I wouldn't be surprised in the next year if you saw a growing number of crowdfunding websites begin to allow internet consumers to make small amounts of interest on the internet.
There's actually, I can't believe this, somebody wrote a blog post saying you're a criminal enterprise. I don't even know if we should even address this, but somebody in the chat room has mentioned this. It's some anarchist blog. You are a registered 501c3, right?
Yeah, we're a registered 501c3. We have 90 employees in San Francisco. We've been audited 3 years in a row. We have a 4-star rating on Charity Navigator, the highest rating you can get on Charity Navigator. I'm not in jail at the moment. I'm speaking from my office.
It might look like a jail, but it's your office.
They usually don't allow nice green prints like that.
What about, I mean, the lenders you work through, one of the things this guy says is that they're charging interest. Are they charging interest?
Yes. We work with small banks and nonprofits that charge interest in order to try to pay their bills and do this work sustainably. 80% of our partners are actually losing money doing this work. They're not charging enough interest to cover their costs, but they do charge interest, and we allow them to keep that spread.
And what kind of interest? What are we talking about?
The interest rates vary region to region. We have, I think the average is around 30%, though, on $400 loans. So
that's significant.
Compared to the U.S., it's very high. But compared to their markets, where the loan sharks are charging, you know, 1,000% interest, it's very, very low. It's the lowest in the neighborhood.
And it has to be considered fair because you've got such a high repayment rate.
You're reaching borrowers that are previously unreached. And so they reach them by motorcycle, by bicycle. They visit borrowers once every 2 weeks for periods of a year. They visit in groups. They do a lot of work. So it's that hands-on operational cost, which leads to an interest rate that's, by U.S. standards, very high.
And how do you cover your operational expenses?
We don't charge any interest ourselves.
Right.
So we don't make anything back off the loans. We process the loans and send 100% of the loan to the developing world cost-free for us. The way we make money, we're a nonprofit. We don't make money. But the way we cover our costs is by asking our users to make a small donation to Kiva. So if a user...
So your entire revenue comes from your participating lenders giving you a little extra.
We ask them to make a voluntary donation to us. And so we have a million users a year. On average, those users will lend about $100, and they'll donate to Kiva about $8 a year. Okay. So we're making enough to cover our costs in San Francisco that way.
Yeah, I think a more legitimate criticism to deal with when looking at not just Kiva, but micro-lending in general is it having the effect that we hoped it would have. There's been a lot of legitimate studies on that, and some of them indicate that maybe it isn't, maybe it is. How do you feel? You know, you're on the front lines with this. How do you feel it's working?
Well, I'd say it works incredibly well. It's a very, very rich experience. And when you're on the ground, you come back with an added sense of respect for that work and just how difficult it is. But it's not quite as an instant silver bullet effect that you might think it is from the U.S. It's a lot of hard work. Borrowers make incremental gains. So after a year, someone might gain enough revenue to buy a lock for their house,
right,
or buy a freezer so that they can store fish in the freezer so that they can scale their supply of fish that they sell in a marketplace over time. But these are incremental gains, people working their way to a better standard of poverty or out of poverty,
right,
over time. But it's over the course of many, many years. And I think the mistake we make as Americans sitting here is thinking that any one thing we can do will have a miraculous instant impact on someone's life. And that's just not how life works in countries with no infrastructure.
This feels good, too, because you feel like it's not a handout to these people. I think it appeals to people. Because you're helping them help themselves, in effect.
Yeah, and another way to think about it is we're fighting a war of inclusion. So there's about 3 billion people on Earth today without access to a bank account.
Right.
And so we're one by one including more people in the global financial system and giving them access. You know, it's really hard to build a life if you can't save money. It's really dangerous to save money under your mattress or in your house somewhere, and it's really hard to build an income that way. And so first and foremost, it's about empowerment and inclusion and giving people the option to take a loan, the option to build their business if they want to take that option.
You know, Jacqueline Novogratz has given some good TED Talks on patient capitalism and the idea of sustainable development and the importance of having nonprofit investment in developing areas where you're not going to get a high return and you're not going to get a quick return. I'd be interested in your thoughts on what she's talked about and where you see yourself fitting into that philosophy.
Yeah, Jacqueline Novogratz of the Acumen Fund is a huge inspiration. I've read her book and studied the Acumen Fund a lot when I was starting Kiva as, you know, an inspiration to our work. And I think what we're doing is quite similar. We're operating in that space between donations and commercialism, right in the middle. I've tended to call this space the connected capital space. It's a space where you want to interact with the people on the other end as you interact with a friend. You're not necessarily giving your friend a donation. You don't want to give your friend a handout. You want to interact with your friend on an equal level. But you also don't want to take advantage of your friend, and you don't want to suck every last dollar of profit off of your friends and family. It's a mutually beneficial relationship, and that's a really interesting and growing set of money in the world is going to be freed, sort of unlocked out of people's wallets to share with other global digital friends, if you will, in the years to come.
Yeah. How many of your borrowers are women?
About 80% of the borrowers on Kiva are women. I think that's because, in general, women are the figures in society that often care first and foremost for their family. So when you empower a woman, you're really empowering a family. And if you look at where the loans go, they often go to pay things like school fees, medicine, and food for a family to allow them to improve their livelihood. I think also they just pay back at a higher rate than men. And so our partners around the world are choosing. They're safer credit bets.
Yeah. Tell me about the oversight you have with the partners, because that's if there's a weak link in this, it's the partners. That you're not giving mm-hmm. these loans directly, you're using partners in the country, and I understand why you're doing that. What kind of oversight do you exercise over them?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I started Kiva, I was just one entrepreneur out in Silicon Valley trying my best, doing this work at night. I emailed NGOs all over the world to say, hey, come raise money on this new website that I started. All of a sudden, you know, I was in the paper and on the getting publicity through blogs, and I spread really fast virtually. So from Kenya to Uganda to Tanzania, eventually to Nicaragua, South and Eastern European, so to Bulgaria and Tajikistan, all over the world. I was spreading like this sort of digitally, and what we noticed was, if you don't have a presence, and if you don't go visit the places where you're sending money, you often can get in bad situations. So about your...
Because there's scammers out there who would definitely try to become Kivo fellas and say, hey, give me some money.
And I found that out the hard way. So in 2006, 2007, I spent a lot of time trying to get the money back from people that had taken it for the wrong reasons. So I was fighting a court case in Kenya, a court case in Uganda, a court case in Ghana and Ecuador. All over the world, I had these problem situations. Luckily, the Kiva user base supported us, and we built an infrastructure so that we can go visit and do vetting and due diligence, check audited financial statements, monitor social impact and all this stuff. So it's really been an uphill battle, but we've come a long way.
It turned out to be much more complicated than you thought, didn't it, Matthew?
Yeah. stuff I'm really bad at. I hired a lot of people to help out with.
Sometimes doing good is hard work. I just want to show people how you would get involved with Kiva. Here's the website, kiva.org. It's very easy to register. If you have a Facebook account, you can just sign up using Facebook, or you can create an account here. I signed up with Facebook. That made it very, very easy. It'll probably say, well, you're already a member. There you go. Now, the next thing you want to do is find a loan. So how do we do this, Matthew? Are we actually looking for somebody who needs money?
Yeah, there are people that need loans all over the world. There's right there, this guy in Mongolia, his loan might expire. There's a group of borrowers in Chile that are getting money to start clothing sales businesses. There's
so you really know who this money is going to go to. These are the people who actually will get the money.
Yeah, they get the loans, and if they pay back the loans, you'll get paid back by them. If they don't pay back the loan, you won't get paid back. It's a highly connected experience.
It's not a pool that I'm giving into. This is actually somebody I'm lending to. How's that been for you, Tom? What is that like? Well, I mean, do you get an experience of who? I'm asking Tom because he's a lender. Does that give you a better sense of what you're up to? I mean, I imagine it's kind of nice to know where you're helping.
Yeah, well, it is, and you guys have done a great job of sort of continuing to update the story in a lot of cases of how these people are doing, what they're doing with their money, how their businesses are doing, And so when I think, Soren Sari is pig farm is doing better now, and maybe I had
That's
a little
a
bit of
sense.
To do with that.
Yeah.
It does feel great. I think a lot of people shy away from this because they feel like, well, I can't believe this. You know, maybe this is made up and I don't want to get taken. But the fact of the matter is, this is not stuff that you can easily fake. What kind of assurances can you give to people so they know, like, hey, you know what? Yaya Jenkins really got my money to set up his pharmacy in Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
One thing we do is we send about 100 interns into the field every year. We call them Kiva Fellows. And they go and work in a place like Bolivia or in a place like Lima, Peru. And they'll go out and their job is to one by one visit these people. We can't visit them all. We've had about almost 750,000 borrowers on Kiva to date. So we can't visit all of them. We visit a statistically significant subset of them, and with our own interns, ask them questions like, how has the loan impacted your life? did you get this loan? How big was the loan? And what did you use it for? And we often write updates back to our lenders about how that conversation went. So if you check the top of our website, you'll see an updates tab where you can see the results of interviews with, you know, dozens, maybe hundreds of borrowers every week.
That's neat. Now, and then how do the borrowers find you? I mean, how do they know where to go?
It's a big outreach project because most of these borrowers don't use the internet. So they're not on Twit TV watching this show.
You
have to explain a lot to them. So you have to go out into the field and meet people where they are. Whether that be in a province far outside of Phnom Penh, Cambodia, or a cattle farmer in rural Kenya, far outside of Nairobi. The hard work of visiting them is really what makes this business so costly. That's why there are interest rates, just to cover those costs.
Right. You have a Choose For Me button, which I guess just randomly chooses people.
Yep.
And so here's Yusra needs $725 to maintain her home. So sometimes it's as simple as that. It's not necessarily a business. Somebody wants to fix her steps so her kids don't fall down the steps every time.
And it's the equivalent of an equity loan here in the United States when you're like, oh, we have a house. We're going to borrow a little against that equity and fix it up, except they don't have the equity for that.
Right.
And they don't need nearly as much money as we would need either.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to check out now. So I've picked a few people to loan, and then it adds a little. It says $11 to support Kiva. I'm going to put that in, and then I go through PayPal to check out on this right here, like that. So it's very simple, and it's kind of fun to browse and see who you're helping. Do I now get updates on the people that I've loaned money to?
You'll get updates if one of those fellows visits the borrower, or if the loan officer in Mongolia or in Bolivia has the time to write that update. So
In other words.
I think it's like 1 in 4 loans have an update right now. It's been hard to keep up with at 100% with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to push. You keep asking questions while I pay my bill here.
you're lending now?
I just lend it. You know, there's some guy, he wants some money. No problem. I'm going to lend him some money. It's easy. It's fun.
So when you, as you mentioned, you've run into some shysters out there and you've had to fight in court. And I think a lot of people, they look at Kiva and they think it's a great idea, but they think maybe it's a little exploitative, right? It's like, why can't I just give somebody the money instead of having it go through the hands of a loan agency, which may be perfectly legitimate, but maybe some kind of loan shark or somebody's going to charge 30% interest. You know, you've talked a little bit about what you're doing to prevent that from happening, but why is it worth the risk and why is it worth the trouble to go through that rather than just doing grants?
Well, you know, grants aren't always as sustainable as loans. So what I'm looking to do is not necessarily compete with grants, but also unlock that pool of money that's sitting in people's bank accounts or sitting in people's wallets that can go to something in addition to grants. You know, I can give a number of grants per year, small donations, but I could also probably lend out a whole bunch more money than I could give out because I can get it back and do it over and over and over and over again. So what I'm really excited about is adding to that and not necessarily competing with that. We just announced last week that Reid Hoffman lent $1 million on our site. Reid Hoffman, the CEO, the founder of LinkedIn and a Kiva board member, just lent $1 million on our site because he knows that he's going to get that money back and he can do it over and over and over again. And it's a nice compliment to your bank account. When you have money in your Citibank account or any bank account, you don't necessarily know what's really happening with that money. You don't necessarily see what that bank is actually doing with your money. They're probably investing it in a lot of causes that you don't necessarily support. And it's nice to be able to see the faces, read the names of the stories, the low-income people around the world that you're supporting with your money that would have been just sitting in your checking account, not making any money anyway.
Do you loan out to anyone in the United States?
Yeah, you know, I was in New Orleans yesterday. In New Orleans, I gave an award to a company that was starting a construction company to build energy-efficient houses in New Orleans, and they were able to start that business with a $10,000 loan they got from the Kiva lender base. Amazing. And so these are people in New Orleans, lending to other people in New Orleans, supporting local businesses there and getting paid back.
So you're really just looking for people who need the assistance and need that microloan, no matter where it is in the world.
Well, the U.S. is one of the last countries we've reached into. I certainly didn't think of the U.S. when I started Kiva in Uganda. I picked a Swahili word.
Sure.
I was thinking, you know, this would be a place where Americans lend a people that speaks Swahili. But it's become much more than that. The main complaint I had for years, I did customer service for 3 years, and the main complaint I had was, why aren't you working in the U.S.? Why can't I support someone in my backyard? Why are you only interested in helping people in East Africa? So because of that, we started working in the U.S.
How much in your Kiva account loans get repaid? How much do you keep on hand versus is actually out there in people's pockets?
Well, for me, it's all of it. You know, it's nice to keep the velocity going and the money out in the field. For Kiva itself, I would say we have about $100 million per year being lent on the website.
Holy cow.
But we have, you know, maybe 20 million, don't quote me on that, something in that range of funds sitting in the U.S. because lenders aren't relending it fast enough. They might not log on to the site more than once a month, more than once every few months. Therefore, the money can sit stagnant for a while.
And that's money, that the money that goes into the loan section does not go to pay your expenses. It doesn't go to help operating. That always stays in the loan circular, if you will.
Yeah. Unlike a bank, we're not registered as a bank. So unlike a bank, we can't take your money and lend it out to someone else. We can't invest in mortgage-backed securities with your money.
You can't do credit default swaps?
Damn.
I don't know how to do that.
Me either.
But we've actually created a separate entity. The money is held sort of in escrow, if you will, and we can't use that money for whatever we want.
We're going to take a break. We're talking with Matthew Flannery. He's the founder of Kiva.org. I'm so happy. I hadn't done this before, and I've got a little loan thing going here, and Tom's been doing it. That's just really cool. Kiva.org. If you'd like to do it along with us, that'd be a lot of fun. Our show brought to you right now today by Audible.com. And I was just checking to see if Muhammad Yunus has books on Audible, and he sure does. Banker to the Poor,
a great book.
Microlending and the Battle Against World Poverty. You want to understand how this works from the guy who not only invented it, but won a Nobel Peace Prize for doing so. He has another book called Building Social Businesses, the Kind of Capitalism that Serves Humanity's Most Pressing Needs. I follow Muhammad on Google+, and he's very active, very outspoken, very smart fellow. So it's really fun. So here's how you can get that book for free and then take the money and give it to Kiva. Go to audiblepodcasts.com/triangulation. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's the book a month account. But your first book's free, your first month's free, so you can pick any book you want. There are over 100,000 titles. They play on your computer, on your iPhone, iPod, iPad, on the Zune, on a Kindle, on a Magellan GPS, a lot of GPSs, a lot of devices. There's a great Audible app for Android and for iPhone that make it so that your whole library is there. You can add books to your phone, listen to them. They even have badges for listening and stuff like that. I just got the all-nighter badge because I listened like more than 6 hours.
I got the lunchtime, whatever the lunchtime
badge
is.
Yeah, I love those badges. They're so fun. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation and sign up today. This would be a great one. In fact, I'm going to add this to my my Audible wish list. Banker to the Poor, Microlending in the Banking, in the Battle Against World Poverty, Muhammad Yunus. This is what inspired Matthew, and it's the kind of the inspiration for the whole idea of micro lending. But you know, if you said no, I really want a sci-fi title or a mystery or a comedy or I want to laugh.
They do have those.
They do have those too. They
in fact,
have
David
everything.
Weber, the new Honor Harrington one is there.
Yeah, are you into that?
No, but I keep wanting to get there because Steve Gibson keeps talking about
so
it.
Into
I
it.
Know he's so into it. I'm definitely going to try it one of these days.
Yeah, I'd be very curious what you think. Sword and Laser, you should probably do do an Honor Harrington. I thought it was a little bit of a potboiler, but you know, to each his own. I actually my newest download, Trey Ratcliffe said This, I use this to judge whether you have any taste or not. It's a Patrick Rothfuss book called The Name of the Wind. Have you heard of that?
Absolutely. And A Wise Man's Fear is second one.
Is it a good book?
They're
the
fantastic.
King Killer Chronicles?
I love
All right.
them. Does Trey think that anyone who loves them has no taste?
No, vice versa.
Oh, okay, good.
He says, I won't even be your friend if you don't like it. Seriously.
No, I absolutely
love it. If
them.
You want to be my friend, you have to read and love this book.
I've had the pleasure of meeting Patrick, actually, briefly.
There you go. So you could be Trey Ratcliffe's friend, too.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, there's
Trey,
one if you want to.
If you want a
little escapism, there's another choice. The King Killer Chronicles, Day One. Anyway, there's a lot of great stuff. Just go browse around, pick a book, and then sign up for audiblepodcast.com/triangulation, and that book is yours free and yours to keep forever. Audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. We thank them for their support of our good show. It gives us a chance to talk to people like Matthew, who's doing such great work. KIVA.org. Look at this. New users get a free $25 loan.
What?
How can you do that, Matthew?
That's Reed's money. So Reed Hoffman, the CEO and founder of LinkedIn, gave $1 million. And instead of lending it himself, he is letting other users lend out his money.
So
and
what's so the scam here? What does he get out
of it? Yeah, what kind of scam?
What's he pulling on us with all this charity?
There's 12,851 free trials left. They've already done 38. The total is 38,000, I guess, so times 25. That's so you're a third of the way there already. That's great.
Yeah, we've added 25,000 new lenders in the last week.
Wow.
So it's a big week for Kiva.
I'm going to tweet this right now.
Now, does Reed's money keep circulating then?
So you're lending out Reed's money. And the repayments go back to Reed. So he's letting you lend out his money, but you don't get the repayments yourself. They go back to Reed.
But is he gonna leave it in there to churn then?
That's up to Reed.
Yeah.
My guess is he'll want to lend and relend and relend that money.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent program. You know, I want to ask you, because you mentioned being in Uganda, what you think of the Kony 2012 viral video that's going around.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know, I started Kiva in 2004 in Uganda, and at that time, the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, was fairly active in northern Uganda. They were just leaving northern Uganda, but the trail of despair and agony and bitterness they left behind was just amazing, and it was a top story on the minds of everyone in that part of the world. And we worked heavily with internally displaced people in Kampala, Uganda, that had led the North, fleeing someone like Joseph Kony and the child soldiers that he employs to terrorize people. I've been amazed over the last 6 years at how that conflict has been handled, and actually it's been severely minimized over the last few years to the point where I think Joseph Kony hasn't been in Uganda in about 6 years now.
No, as far as I've heard, he's in Central African Republic, yeah. I think.
Right. So the story, insofar as it's affected Uganda itself, has been quieted, or it's nowhere near at the level it was back then. I was amazed when I saw 80 million people watch this video about Joseph Kony. I think my thoughts were twofold. First of all, it's amazing that an American organization can get 80 million people activated enough to care about something that doesn't affect them, mm-hmm. half a world away. And so you have to be impressed. You have to learn from that, because certainly there are so many good causes around the world. The second was, I wondered why now, so many years after this conflict has been a story, why it's now 6 years later, all of a sudden the world is paying attention to it. It's sort of weird. The timing is very odd to me. So I'm both amazed and also perplexed by the timing.
Do you think there are more complex problems or other people or other problems that you would wish would get this kind of attention?
Certainly. But I think the one chain of logic that I want to stay away from is saying, you did a good job getting awareness of this, but what you really should have done is get awareness on that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people like to criticize nonprofits for what they're not doing. So they'll say, it's okay that you're doing this, really well, but what you really should be doing is this really well. And so,
right, like I could see somebody saying, "Oh, Kiva is doing a great job with microloans, but what are they doing about arsenic and wells in India?" And you're like, well, nothing. That's not what our business is.
Or what about the fruit flies at the Twit Kitchen? What are you doing about that? That's what I want to know.
You
can't do everything.
Yeah, and I heard, Dr. Muhammad Yunus, the leader of the Grameen Bank, is an incredible inspiration to me. And he really, popularized and spread access to financial services in Bangladesh and some other things. But he wasn't doing everything. He wasn't running orphanages.
Right.
But he wasn't providing health care necessarily to the women he worked with at first. And so people would criticize him all the time. People would say, yeah, he's doing this, okay, but what he really should be doing is this. Mm-hmm. And so it's once you sign up to do something, people criticize you for not doing everything. And I remember somebody defend Professor Yunus at a conference. They said something like, I like what Dr. Yunus is doing a whole lot better than what you're not doing. And that really made an impact on me.
Well played.
Rather than criticize people for what they are doing,
right.
If you're the person making that criticism, why don't you just go do something?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to look at it. And I think the reason the Kony 2012 video has gotten criticized is twofold. One is a little bit of jealousy, where certain NGOs and organizations are like, oh, why couldn't we have gotten a video to get that much attention?
Sure.
Just not even like horrible jealousy, but just envy, I guess, maybe a better word. And the other is because, like you said, the timing is weird. It's a problem that is certainly still a problem, but maybe on the wane. And so without saying, like, gosh, I wish the Invisible Children would have done something else, I'm curious if you have causes that you wish that folks who have the skills to put this sort of attention on something could call attention to, if you could set the agenda for filmmakers or folks who want to raise awareness. Are there causes that you're championing besides just the general one of microloans and Kiva?
My job is to get the voices of the unheard to be more paid attention to. So for me, it's I would love to see millions of small voices get a voice on the digital stage and connect to a community and not necessarily make one video that gets 80 million people to care about one person's cause, but rather just to grow the global community and give people that are completely left out of the world a voice to speak their own mind rather than have some nonprofit speak their case for them. It's my goal to have a million voices speak their own story and voice their own dreams and tell their own narrative directly to the people that are supporting them. So at Kiva, it's less about an organization in the middle that markets the story of a million people. It's actually creating a community that allows a million people to market to a million people. Yeah. And that's really the work that I'm trying to do.
Now, there's a challenge for a storyteller. Take those million voices, using them, and make a compelling story. I think that would be fantastic.
Although that was
a difficult challenge.
That was the lesson of the Kony video, according to some, was that by focusing on one person, and we know this, we've seen studies recently that say it's overwhelming if it's a million people, if it's one person and one story, that we get it and we can understand it and that we can get behind it. But you do that very well on the front page of the Kiva site, where you highlight specific people. And you see their face. I love it that you see their faces and you get pictures of everybody. That must have been challenging by itself.
Yeah, well, it's about bringing those people themselves into the conversation.
Yes.
And allowing those people to have authentic connections with a million other people. So a million small connections versus a million to one,
right,
in the case of Joseph Kony, or 80 million to one, if you want to put it that way.
Right. It must be fascinating to talk to these people, and they know that there's 30 people or 20 people, primarily, I imagine, in the U.S. Do you get lenders from all over the world?
About 80% of our lenders are in the USA, and then the rest are spread out between Canada, Europe, and a small amount in about 100 countries.
What?
We've had We've had lenders in Kenya lend to somebody in New York.
I love that. What is the borrower? I mean, what is the reaction of the borrowers that you've talked to when they know that 25 people in the U.S. all banded together to give him $25? It must be an interesting experience for them.
Well, first of all, it's hard. So most of the people we work with don't use a computer. So you have to go hear their story, let them tell their own story, and then try to record that and type it in. So it's a challenge.
Right.
We often will show those people the profiles of the lenders that have lent to them, and they're quite amazed.
I bet.
I think the first thing is, whoa, this picture represents the first public record of my existence. Mm. So a lot of these people don't have a public picture of them available. A lot of them don't have an identity card, or any record of their existence in the place where they live. So this is often their first permanent record of existence. And I think they feel surprised that 30 people, or in some cases 300 people, took the time to lend them money. It's a little bit confusing. It's also an honor. We've taken these pictures and printed them out and showed them the profiles of their lenders. One time, a fellow of ours was in Kenya and did this and showed the pictures, and there was a cat that had lent them money. So see the pictures of all the lenders. Sometimes people upload a picture of a dog or a cat or a sunset. And so this just creates a lot of explanatory challenges. I think, the lender that saw a cat lent to them asked, why should I pay that cat back? Why do I have to pay back that cat?
Yeah, that's a cultural barrier there.
You know, the cat gave you money.
Yeah, you owe the cat.
Yeah. So it's tricky situations, cross-cultural connections. Yeah.
So Matthew, you must go to bed at night and feel pretty good about what you've accomplished. What are your goals for the future? What would you like to do next?
Yeah, well, one is bringing down the cost of capital. So we mentioned today the interest rates in microfinance. Poor people pay too much on their loans. They pay too high of an interest rate, and that's because it's a lot of work to reach them. One thing we're doing is trying to bring the interest rate down through the use of digital technology. In Kenya right now, 1 in 5 transactions happens over mobile device. So people actually get a mobile bank account much further sooner than they get an actual bank account. And there's digital mobile technology is spreading much faster than banking in that part of the world. So we have a project right now called Zip, zip.kiva.org. If you want to be a member, you can request a membership on that website where you can make a loan directly to someone's mobile phone in rural Kenya. So this, you can actually SMS money to the account of a mobile phone user in rural Kenya, and they will pay you back. We're about 3 months into that project, and we have about a 95% repayment rate.
And is there interest rate on that at all? Does a phone company take some, or what?
No, these are true 0% interest loans. So
we didn't ask
the permission of the phone company. We just tapped into their mobile payment system and started lending money directly to these people in rural Kenya. Truly 0% interest loans, and so far so good.
And what's the repayment rate on something like that where you don't have an intermediary?
Well, this hasn't really been done before, so no one really knows how it's going
to
work out.
It's still too early to tell. Yeah. But it was funny when you brought up mobile phone technology, which is huge in areas in Africa and India and places like that. My immediate thought was, wouldn't it be great if I could just send the money right to the person? And that's exactly what you're doing. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I stole your thunder. I knew you were going to ask that.
No, you're way ahead of me. I can't wait to see what else you guys do.
That's really neat. That's really neat. Matthew, it's been so great talking to you. KIVA.org. And I want to thank, I'm going to go back to my Kiva account because 7 people. I put an invitation on Twitter. And let me just look real quickly. It looks like Arthur, Evan, Anonymous, Brad, M. Barrier, Tony, Dan, and Guy, and Eric. Thank you for accepting the invitation and participating in Kiva. And let's get some more people involved in those $25 trials. Hey, come on. It's Reed's money.
That's right. You don't even have to use your own.
Let's spend Reed's money. All right?
Loan, not spend. Loan.
Reed's money. Matthew Flannery, Kiva.org. Thank you. I have to ask you about this beautiful sheet behind you. What's the story about that? Is there a story?
That's from Kenya. That's from our NGO partner called Cori Microfinance, a great institution out in No, Senegal. Sorry, that's from Senegal.
Very good. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you, and good luck. Keep up the good work.
Great meeting you, Matt.
If you want to know more about the ZIP program, zip.kiva.org. Neat idea. Really neat idea.
Please help out.
Thanks, Matthew.
Okay.
See ya.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
And thanks for joining us. We do Triangulation 4 p.m. Wednesdays. That's Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time at twit.tv. Watch live. It's always fun. I know we have some good guests coming up because it is International Women's Month. We have some interesting women coming up the next couple of weeks.
Katarina Fake is coming up. I'm not sure which show.
One of the founders of Flickr.
Yeah.
And she's been doing some very interesting startups.
I'm in Pinwheel, and she commented on one of my Pinwheel posts.
Wow.
I was very, Cool.
And somebody else, and I've forgotten who we've talked to.
Leah Jenny, Busk.
Next
week.
From TaskRabbit, that's who. And we've talked to Jenny Jardin. I know a lot of you want to see Jenny, as you know. She is right now undergoing cancer treatment, and we want to make and she's in the middle of chemo right now. So we've made a deal with her. She's going to come on. She's not really ever told her story fully, except on Twitter and a little bit on Boing Boing. But she's said, you know, I trust you. I trust your audience. So I would love to come on and talk about it. So we all love Jenny. We just wish her the best. And so she will join us at some point in Triangulation as well. So thanks to everybody for being here. Please come back and see us next Wednesday. If you miss a show, we've got 44 great shows in the can now, and they're all at twit.tv/TRI, or subscribe to Triangulation. That's the best thing. Subscribe. Best for us, best for you. Subscribe to Triangulation on iTunes, the Zoom Marketplace, whatever you use as a podcatcher. That way you get a show each and every week, and you don't miss a single one. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Leo.
On Triangulation. Bye-bye.